Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So even though this is the second Wednesday night of the retreat, it is still with, I don't know about you, but I haven't fully recovered yet from the long weekend, birthday and conference and funerals and friends and goodness knows what else has been going on. And still though it's the time, please turn off your robots. So still it is a time that I am trying to encourage everybody to develop the deeper meditations. You can study any time of the year. You can build. You can counsel. You can support the Buddhist practice by giving talks all over the place and going to AGMs of Federation of Australian Buddhist Councils and all this other stuff. But, you know, all that external stuff is all negligible compared to the main reason, you know, why we have monasteries, why we have these committees and this other stuff, which is basically to exit samsara. Because I work very, very hard trying to fix up things. And as you all know, that it is unfixable sometimes. So there's a time when you say, well, the only really thing we need to do is to leave the sinking ship. And the way to leave that sinking ship is to leave, first of all, the sinking body. And I was at, someone reminded me of a quote which I said many, many years ago, and I said it over in the Nolamara a few weeks ago. It's a very beautiful definition of life. It says life is embarking on a boat. As a boat goes out to sea, knowing it will never ever come back to any port, but it will sink at sea. And that's a very beautiful description of what life is like. So we've already left the port, and there is no haven for us as our body gets older and sicker and wears out. And so if you are looking for a haven in this world, if you're looking for like a happy abiding in the world of the five senses, you'll be looking all your life and get nowhere. And that whole problem of suffering and dukkha which the Buddha saw and acknowledged. I always like that metaphor of the Lord Buddha under the Bodhi tree before he was enlightened. And Mara sort of saying, you could be this incredible, powerful emperor. You can fix up so many things in the world. You know, you can create peace and harmony and prosperity and good health and happiness for the whole world. Why don't you do that? And of course, the Buddha saw through that straight away and said, basically, you're offering me something which is impossible. So instead, I'm going to become enlightened and leave the world behind. And to me, that's, you know, so really important. All that other stuff which we do the rest of the year, all the writing of the books, all of the building of the monasteries, all of the whatever it is, all those projects which you have, please put them aside for this range retreat as much as you possibly can. And if you do any projects, they are not the number one priority of the day. The number one priority of the day was to use this opportunity, you know, to leave samsara. And the only way we can leave that samsara is through the meditation practice. So these are supposed to be forest monasteries, places where we can develop our meditation to the max. And to be able to do that, we need everybody's help. So please, in Dhammasara, in Bodhinyana, in Jhana Grove, please don't create too many problems. Because once a problem starts, that destroys many people's meditations. If somebody does something which is improper, forgive them straight away. That's their karma. Let it go, because the purpose of this monastery is to be peaceful and calm. It's not to have a perfect kitchen. It's not to have well-swept paths. It's to have the opportunity for monks, for nuns, to really get into some deep meditation state. So keep the priority that it's not a perfect monastery, but it's perfect monks, perfect nuns. Because if we are always going to try and fix up this monastery first of all, get it all right and then we can meditate, you find that never ever happens, not once. So this is the reason why we have a rains retreat. It's a retreat from fixing up things, a retreat from changing things, a retreat from improving things on the outside, so we can focus on the inner world. For 9 months of the year, we focus on the outside, and you work really, 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 really hard on that. For 3 months, focus on the inner part of the human being. And to be able to do that, we have to give it importance, give it value. Because otherwise, you know, this in a monastery, you try to keep it simple. You know, as the leader, you try and keep as many things out as possible, but this the world keeps creeping into monasteries, doing stuff. And not just doing stuff, just arguments and criticism and fault-finding. Please leave that out. And in a monastery, I always try to impress, so even though people have argued with me, they think I've got it wrong. But in monasteries, if I'm leading, it has to be a community of hermits. So, you know, think of yourself as a hermit. Especially here in Bodhinyana Monastery, you know, you've got your own hut. And in the hut, you know, you've got your walking path, you've got a bush toilet, you've got your water. And many of the monks here now have got solar panels with electricity and gas heaters. So it's pretty comfortable. So please stay there as much as you possibly can. And if you do come out for your breakfast or for lunch, please try not to talk to one another. Because you may think you want to talk, but your talk is destroying other people's meditation. What karma are you doing when you just go and just try and talk to a person? Yeah, outside, no, we try and be happy and be kind to one another. There may be a monk there who's getting very peaceful and very still, and you go up there and you're wanting to talk and joke around and say all this stuff. You may be disturbing them. That's bad karma. So please have some more quietness in this monastery. Be silent, be a hermit. You don't need to tell other people about your great meditations. If you do, it wasn't that much of a meditation. You need just to be peaceful and silent and just to almost like float invisibly through this monastery for 3 months. As if no one sees you. They don't hear you. You know, you do have your jobs and chores to do. That's why we've given them all out now. You know exactly what you need to do. There's very few questions need to be asked. So, see if we can calm the talking down. For those of you who are working in the kitchen, you have to talk with the people who come here. So you don't sort of say to the people who come into this monastery to serve us, ah, I'm on silent retreat, don't talk to me when I'm washing up. No, you have to be kind there. That is the job of the Anagarikas, and all those monks have been through that before. So wait till you take the novice or the monks before you can keep the more silent practice. You've got to earn your ability to meditate first, the opportunity. Some of the monks, you know, have been here for years and they really earned the time to be quiet. Other people have just come here. So, but when you have those opportunities, please grab them. And which means that we give the importance to silence. And you do find, this is so clear from your own experience, all the teachers say the same, that if you do talk too much, you're not going to have a peaceful mind when you meditate. The two go together. When the mind is peaceful and still, you don't feel like talking. When you don't talk, it actually keeps the whole mind quiet as well. And so we just start to build up the supporting conditions for our meditation practice. This is what those supporting conditions mean. It's sapaya. You know, it's where we get the Thai word sabai. It's the same word, sapaya, but just, you know, got into the vernacular in the Thai pronunciation. So when we have the sapaya of like silence, we have good food, we have nice places to rest, then it's only up to you now to take that opportunity and spend time in your huts. And of course, that if you are going to develop meditation, it takes time. And the more time you spend on your cushion, meditating, or in a chair, it doesn't really matter, the more time you do the walking meditation, the more time you spend practicing, there's more chance you're going to get some results. And by results, I mean you're going to start to feel peaceful and start to enjoy the benefits of meditation, which are huge. Before, now I always, you know, make a point about what right effort is, and I'm just reinforcing what I said before. The right effort, you know, the striving, the struggling, is to get onto your meditation cushion, to get back to your hut. It is to get on the walking meditation path and start walking. The energy stops there once you've started walking. Once you're on that meditation cushion, then you're on that little bus, you don't strive and struggle anymore, you sit still and be quiet. That's where the letting go starts. But if one lets go before one gets onto the meditation cushion or chair, before one gets onto the meditation path, of course, you know, you'll never get on there. And you'll find you're putting off the time, the days go, the range retreat is almost over, and you've wasted so much time. Now for some people they've had bad experiences before with meditation. They haven't really got that deep. And the whole idea of a 3 month or now 2.5 month meditation retreat fills them with fear and dread. Oh my goodness, what am I going to do? Can never forget this one monk. We saw a photo of him today at the funeral ceremony. This one monk who was starting the range retreat, just came in from Thailand, and he got himself a roster, because we weren't having tea in the evening time. The only people who would have tea up in the dining hall was myself and the attendant to answer the phone. And he thought, my goodness, being by myself all day, so he had a roster of monks and novices he would visit for a cup of tea every afternoon. That was really funny. And he said, no, that's not the point of it, you know, being with other people. Try and be alone a lot. Because in that solitude, with nothing to do except sit down and just be still, be with what you have. It's only a matter of time. You have to become peaceful and still. And for those people who start the meditation with, oh God, here we go again, please also understand that meditation can be just so surprising. If you begin a meditation with the idea that you're hopeless, you can't do it, it's going to be more boring stuff, That is the reason why the meditation does become boring and just doesn't cause you any happiness. You've psyched yourself up the very beginning. This is basic psychology, which all of you should know by now. If you think it's not going to work, it won't work. So it does need just basic common sense to understand the past does not control the present. Only if you make it control the present. It's one of the great insights. This moment right now is actually pretty independent. Whatever happened before, I've done this before. Tired, getting nowhere, and changing it in a moment. Getting some really nice meditation going, getting energy coming up in a moment. You can turn it all around. How do you do that? Just by understanding. Just the present moment is independent of your past. You only make it control your present moment by just letting that karma just come in, choosing to actually allow that karma to affect this present moment. So it does not matter at all what your previous meditations have been. It doesn't matter if you're sitting there and you had a terrible meditation 5 minutes ago. You can just bliss out in this moment. Very simple teachings of present moment awareness. And it's the same if the days are long because you've got nothing to do. And the nights are long too, 7, 8 o'clock, oh God, I want to go to bed but I'm not tired. You can notice that basic meditation teachings have been lost. You've lost the present moment. If you really want to get some good meditation, then in your room, you can actually put the clock in a drawer, hide it, so you don't know what time it is. You know in the morning when it gets light that it's time if you want to go for breakfast, you can go for breakfast. But how about hiding the clock at night time? So it's got dark and you're meditating, you don't know whether it's 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock. Which means that you get free from this terrible controller of time. Which is thinking, oh, it's 7 o'clock, it's 8 o'clock, I should go to bed, or I'm not tired, I should stay up later on. No later ons at all. You feel the body, you feel the mind, and you're not afraid, just to test it, to test the limits. To see if you can just be peaceful in this moment with a tired body. You don't even know what time it is. So you wake up in the morning, you've got no clock to look at. So you don't know whether it's 1 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock. So what happens? You just get up. Instead of looking at the clock, it's only 2 o'clock, oh, it's too early, I've got to go to sleep again. Don't do that sort of stuff on this rain retreat. Do it differently. You've got this opportunity, to get deep meditation, get enlightened. Take this opportunity. Hide the clock. But of course, if you hide it, you have to hide it outside somewhere, because if you hide it just some corner of the hut, it doesn't work. You just go foraging for it, find it, and then, oh, 2 o'clock, I'm going back to bed again. If it's outside the other end of your walking path, by the time you go and find it, you're up anyway. It's a bit too late to go back to bed again. So what we're doing there is just getting rid of this prison of time, which stops us meditating. And then we can just be in this moment, be in your hut. You have nothing else to do but to sit and to walk, sit and walk. Of course, when you first really get into long periods of meditation, it is uncomfortable. You're making a change. It's like a jet lag for those people who travel from the other end of the world to come to our conference. But that jet lag soon disappears. That difference, that lag between being a busy monk and being a monk who just has nothing to do except sit and walk, soon disappears. It's why that to get into any sort of deep meditation and get somewhere on this path, you have to have some endurance. You have to be able to bear with those aches and pains and dullness. to bear with it because it does pass. And it's the same with not just the physical feelings of the yuckiness when you first start on a range retreat and stop yourself indulging and stop yourself going to all these places, stop yourself reading all this stuff. Yeah, it's hard at first, but it gets easier and easier, and you feel that you're getting into something which is really worthwhile. And then, of course, you have to overcome the sort of negativity to a tired or restless mind. And to endure it, to be with it. And to be able to have a body and mind which isn't the best, which isn't peaceful, which isn't happy, which isn't energized. And to be at peace with that. Endurance means being at peace with the unpleasant. Of course it's easy to be at peace with the pleasant stuff. Anyone can do that. But if you really want to develop this path, you have to learn how to be at peace with the unpleasant, with a tired old body, to be at peace with it, instead of trying to get rid of it. To be at peace with the dullness in the mind when you start meditating. And I do work far too much. And a lot of time I've got no control over that. A lot of time, like this evening, once I finish here, I go back to my cave, sit down, I'll be dull as hell. Been out all afternoon. And with other stuff this morning as well. So I'll be very tired. But I don't care whether the dullness disappears or not. I'm going to make peace with a very unpleasant feeling of dullness. I'm not going to fight it. I'm going to make peace with it. If I fall asleep, I fall asleep. If it goes away, it goes away. But the most important thing is my reaction, attitude towards it. Because that is building the foundations of the deep meditations. If I fight, I've lost the path. I've been controlling, trying to make something happen, creating this control of this which makes up the sense of self. But if I don't fight, make peace with it. The very fact of making peace with an unpleasant feeling is a powerful cause of bliss later on in the meditation. Restless, because you've been talking, doing stuff. Your mind has been agitated. It's like the glass of water which has been shaken. You can't just put the glass of water down and expect it to stop immediately. It takes time. And I know that, but I trust it takes time and I give it that time to stop. I know some people say, oh, well, I give it an hour, I give it a day, I give it 10 range retreats, and it still hasn't stopped yet. It's because you haven't left it alone. You're always interfering with these things. So we learn how to leave things alone. With a restless mind or a tired mind, we are aware of it. And this is why this whole idea of making peace with this, it's just a beautiful word. Because it's something which you can understand, you can get your head around it. You know what peace is, you know, in the kitchen, in the life or whatever. You can make peace with things. You've done it before, you know, with external things. And now use that same method to make peace with whatever's going on in your head right now. And I call that making good meditation karma. I always love the Buddha's teachings on karma. It's not just, you know, by body and speech, it's also mental karma. And by that I mean just making peace with the dullness, with the restlessness, with whatever it is in your head right now. When you make peace with it, that's really a good karma. It will lead to wonderful results. Good karma leads to good vipaka. Vipaka means the results of karma. You know that. If you don't know that yet, try it out. It works. The Buddha actually told the truth. He was very accurate. So I know whatever I'm dealing with right now, I can always make good karma with it. Making peace. And the other one is just being kind, compassionate. And I just can never go past. Maybe you can go past this and find a different, a better metaphor. This beautiful opening the door of my heart to this moment, no matter what it is. And again, of course, it's very easy to open the door of my heart when I'm blissing out, having a really great time. But to be able to open the door of my heart to the dullness and the tiredness and the sickness and the weariness and the restlessness, to be able to open my heart to that is really an important skill to use. So if I am dull, if I am restless, marvelous, now I'm training. Train this ability to be compassionate to the mental states, to open the door of my heart to these things. Training. So the next time I'm dull, the next time I'm restless, it's much easier just to be with it. Because when you open the door of your heart to something, and it's the heart you're opening the thing to, not just the mind, you open the door of the heart, you're also giving this beautiful compassion and kindness, this softness, this gentleness, which is really, really important for meditation, for monastic life. To be a gentle monk, a gentle bhikkhuni, a gentle anagarika, a gentle jhana groovy. There's beautiful gentleness there, which is a soft kindness, which you can see from what happens in the meditation and what causes deep meditation. And when you can open the door of your heart to your tiredness, your dullness, to your depression, to your restlessness, to your fear, when you open the door of your heart to it, it has to diminish. Usually very, very quickly. That's one of the reasons I said that you can have dullness, negativity, the last moment, and you open the door of your heart to it, and it vanishes so quickly. You find this is the way that you are not a prisoner of your past. Whatever would happen to you, you can actually leave it behind, totally. And it's an incredible experience to behold. I've done it so many times, I know this is true. So you do it too. Don't care what's happened to you earlier on. You can totally be a different person. Immediately. Let it go. Open the door of your heart to this moment as it is. And that incredible powerful karma of kindness, it just diminishes any tiredness, any aches and pains, any dullness, any restlessness, any fear. Open the door of your heart to this. Embrace it. Make peace with it. And you do find that these things vanish. And this is meditation. Because people keep asking you, what do you actually do in meditation? The word for doing is like karoti. It's, you know, the noun is karma. What karma do you do in meditation? And in fact, you know, the word for meditation is sometimes called kamatana, the basis of your karma. And for many people, they call kamatana the breath, or the scanning the body, or metta, or whatever. That's not really the basis of the karma. That's almost like its goal. But the most important part of karma is where it's coming from, the motivation, the source of it. And so to me, the tana, the base of karma, in meditation, is making peace, being kind, being gentle. That is my kamatana. Because if you get the base, the source, the foundation right, everything else just goes just beautifully and perfectly. And you can see just how simple that is. So, what do you do? Ajahn Brahm, what do you do in meditation? Do you watch the breath? Do you scan the body? Do you do metta meditation? Just to arouse nimittas? What do you do? And that is all I do, quite honestly. Cross my heart, I hope to die in a cellar full of rats with bad breath or whatever I used to say when I was a kid. I just sit there and I make peace with this moment. And I open the door of my heart. I always remember the kindness and the gentleness to my body and mind. And I get really tired sometimes. I get very busy sometimes. That's all I do. And I wait. I don't expect anything. So sometimes I do fall asleep. That's cause and effect. But I know this is just the body doing its thing. It's the mind doing its thing. It's not my body. It's not my mind to control. As soon as I realize it's not my body, my mind, I don't get embarrassed or afraid or guilty or ashamed. I am a senior monk. I'm really well known. What happens? I fall asleep when I meditate. I don't know, those of you who heard, was it Buddha Rakata's talk? Well, that's right, I think he gave this at the conference. Some of you may not have heard this. He said that he went to this retreat somewhere with Bhanteji. Bhanteji was his teacher. And he was sitting in front of Bhanteji, Venuguna Ratana, and he'd come all the way, I think it was in India, he'd come all the way from England or somewhere, but he was jet-lagged. And so he was sleepy. And he started nodding, and he got so embarrassed, nodding in front of his teacher. And he was fighting and fighting and fighting it, until, you know, he realized he couldn't fight it anymore. He gave up and opened his eyes, really ashamed. And then he saw Bhanteji nodding all over the place, really asleep. And he realized, because Bhanteji had come all the way from US, he was even more jet-lagged. But he said the difference between the senior monk and him was that Venerable Naratana was not ashamed, embarrassed. It was just cause and effect. That was the difference. Very brilliant little piece of advice from Venerable Buddha Rakita. So don't be embarrassed or ashamed. It's nature. But don't fight it, for goodness sake. Because if you're embarrassed about it, ashamed of it, if you own it, that this is my meditation, I'm messing up, I'm terrible, I'm hopeless. As soon as you own the meditation, you add this terrible thing, it's my meditation, that really screws everything up. It's just your mind, it's just body, it's just doing its stuff, that's all. It's nothing to do with you. So if you're tired, be tired. If the body slumps, let it slump. Cause and effect, that's all. The amazing thing is, if you really do that, and don't sort of play around with it, you find that the tiredness vanishes really quickly. If you're ashamed about it and fight it, it just lasts for such a long time. And you have to endure even longer the unpleasantness. Yeah, I said earlier that just you have to make peace with unpleasantness. It's part of meditation, it's part of life. But if it doesn't sort of vanish after a while, sometimes, you know, you're fed up with this teaching. But if you do actually make peace with it, really make peace with it, and are kind to it and gentle with it, it doesn't last that long. And this yuckiness of life, the sort of the boredom of a 3-month range retreat, just vanishes. And you start to enjoy solitude. You know, you all get very well taught about the suttas, and you read all these suttas. And if any of you sometimes thought, people in the days of the Buddha must have been so different. They would go off and they'd get jhanas and they'd get enlightened. Why can't we do that? It must be there's something different with us. And of course, the truth is, there is no difference. Those days and these days. Human beings then, human beings now. Girls and boys, whatever race, we're the same. When it gets to the mind, which is the important part of meditation. It's a wonderful thing to understand that. It says, you can do that too. You can be one of those people who come from a good family, and in no long time, achieve the goal for which people go forth into monastic life. You can do that. How? By having this wonderful sense of endurance, bearing with, making peace, being kind, being gentle with the unpleasant, and watching it transform. Because the way you are relating to your mental states and the world outside too is good meditation karma, you get the results. You are creating the future by making good meditation karma right now. And if it doesn't work, it means you are making unwholesome meditation karma, akusala mental karma. And you know what akusala mental karma is? Fault finding, negativity, anger, all that sort of stuff. It's the way you react to what you have to experience right now. So if we can change our attitude and reaction, make good karma with whatever, you'll find it doesn't take that long. A few days, I say just a few days, and you're sitting there and you're enjoying meditation again. It's starting to work. You sit there and you don't have to force yourself or be bored. It's actually interesting and enjoyable. You start to feel piti sukha coming up, the happiness of meditation. Now, many of you have experienced that happiness of meditation before, which is why you're here. And once that starts to grow, the happiness of meditation, I keep on calling that the pivot point. Because once that starts to occur, then you love meditating. You can't get enough. You're going into your hut, into your cave, whatever, you're meditating and just want more. Brilliant. Never think that that's an attachment. Because for those people who think it's an attachment to bliss out and to enjoy the meditation, the Buddha said again and again, that is the attachment which you don't need to be worried about. That is the attachment which only leads to stream winning, once returning, non-returning, and arahat. The joys of meditation. So when that comes up, attach to it, cultivate it, make much of it. Let the mind leap towards it. You start to get happy meditations. And as a teacher, that makes me so happy. You know, I really work hard. And sometimes I think, what am I doing this for? I'm doing this for the time that you come up to me and say, Ajahn Brahm, I just got jhanas. That's why I do this. For those moments when men and women from good families start to get what's called Uttari Manusa Dhamma, stages beyond the normal experience of humanity, the peaceful, blissful states. And it's not just because it's going to sort of give you a really good time. It's because I know that that's the area where enlightenment starts to happen. That's where you break through. That's where you see things which other people don't see. That's where the Dhamma arises from. That's the area where insights, really, I'm not big insights, which turn you upside down. That's where they happen. That's what we're doing this for. That's why I keep staying here instead of going off into just some hermitage somewhere and just disappearing. I can do that very easily. But I still keep working very hard just to try and get some of you just into that first jhana. You know, that's what... That's wrong. Although that certainly was in Mitrigala. I forget who the teacher was, gone out of my mind. But when I went to visit there many, many, many years ago, the teacher there, he had this rule. Once you went to stay in that forest monastery, you could not leave, even to go to the dentist, to do your visa, or to see a doctor if you were dying. You were not allowed under any circumstances, even life and death circumstances, to leave unless you had first jhana or a stream winner, one of the two. So it really was, you know, you had to endure enormous pain or just die there. I thought that was really neat, really cool. So maybe on Friday when we have our next Patimokkha, we may make that one of our Sangha karma. What that really, really meant was just the importance of that. Because that monk, that's what he wanted to do. The teacher there. One of those two. And because he realized that either of those two would give you enough foundation that you wouldn't need to sort of, to do much more. The snowball effect will take care of the rest. So, this is a range retreat. Let go. Endure the unpleasant. If you do it properly, if it is going in the correct direction, the unpleasantness of changing your mode of being from one of a worker, a doer, to a hermit, that difference, that change, will be unpleasant at first. But if you do it properly, you'll get less and less unpleasant, and you'll start to enjoy, you know, the happiness of the hermit, the solitary one. Yeah, you're still staying in a temple. Yeah, you're still doing your duties. Do you do your duties? You just do the sweeping, you even answer the phone, you wash your bowl. Silently. Calmly. It's as if you just waft through without anybody noticing you. I always like to give him the similes of the burglar. Burglars can just go into a home, sometimes even people are there, and no one hears them. They can do that. Why can't monks and nuns do the same? To come up into the Dhanasala, where we have our lunch, so no one hears you. You sit down, hardly anyone sees you. And after the chanting, you go. And no one even notices you've come or you've gone. The silent one. Now I'm giving you a wonderful opportunity. Because if you can do that, you'll find your meditation starts to take off. You really are become somebody who's just calming down. Peaceful. The silent sage. And that will mean you start to bliss out and have some great fun in this meditation. Just trying to get to that point. When you start blissing out in the meditation, I can give you some more teachings how to make use of that. But for the time being, I want more people just staying in their huts, going back as soon as possible, because they're having so much fun. They enjoy it. And they stay up late at night, not because they're worrying, what time is it? It was 8 o'clock, oh, I'm not going to bed until 9, or 9 o'clock, no, I said I'm going to go back to bed at 10. Those ideas never come up. You're sitting there, you're just enjoying yourself to the max. You just decide, oh, my body's a bit tired, I'll lay down. You lay down, and it's not for that long. You get up again. Fine, maybe you've only slept 3 or 4 hours, but it's natural. It's not forced. Because the mind is enjoying the bliss of meditation. Now this is something which we don't have the opportunity to do at other places. There's many people who have come from all over the world for this retreat. You wonder what they've done this for. Why have they come all this way? If they wanted just to have a happy place to hang out, there's many happy places to hang out. If they want to make merit somewhere or listen to good teachings, just go on YouTube to listen to teachings. Why have they come here for? And the reason is because it's this opportunity to really develop peace in meditation. Deep peace. More peace than you've ever experienced before. More peace than you ever contemplated could exist. A peace which just blows away all of your ideas of what peace could ever be. Stillness. Where nothing moves, where not even nothing exists, where even moving doesn't move, nothing is there, it's gone, finished, silent, deep stillness. And don't think, oh yeah, I know that. Don't be so arrogant. There's always this small peace and stillness. Your job is just to let go to the max. Always making good meditation karma. Every moment making peace, being kind, being gentle. Sometimes that word making peace, people argue with me, that's not really what the Buddha said. Fair enough, you're right. It's nekamma, letting go. renouncing. And of course, that is the word which takes away the sense of self. There's no one who attains jhana, there's no one who attains enlightenment. We vanish, we let go of this idea of a self, me, mine, stuff like that. So we're just sitting there, just no self, no wanting to get anywhere, no feeling guilty because, you know, you haven't been doing the right thing. For goodness sake, take that sense of self away. Let go of me. Be kind, be gentle. Now that's powerful meditation karma. And trust, have faith if you haven't had the experience yet. Have faith if you do the right karma, the vipaka has to come, has to come. It's just physics, law of nature. What goes up comes down. And this is the beautiful law of nature, of meditation discovered by the Buddha. So that's what I'm challenging you to do for this range retreat. Don't mess around. You have this chance, who knows when it might come again. It's up to you. I can always say what the Buddha said, these are the empty huts, the quiet places. You have all the four resources. And for those of you who still have some work to do, you still have lots of space. It doesn't matter just what you've been doing all day. There's not one person in this room now who doesn't have as much work to do as I have. And I can still manage to bliss out. And though, yeah, you've been training for a long time, that's not it. It's all to do with the attitude you have. And I'm sharing that attitude with you. I'm sharing what I do and asking you to do the same. Make peace in your meditation right now. Be kind, be gentle, be silent, don't talk too much. And spend a lot of time in your meditation rooms. Or in here if you want to meditate here. And then you'll have a wonderful retreat. You'll be happy, and so will I. That's the talk this evening.
Sati Pano Bhagavato.